Welcome back to the Game Dev Show. My name is Luke Greenaway, and this week I am joined by the brilliant actress, Alex Wilton-Regan. Alex has starred in Assassin's Creed, Dragon Age, Anno 2077, Vermintide, Mass Effect, and the more recently...
Cyberpunk.
Oh, this is the IMDb list, the credits list goes on, as well as TV shows, TV series. Alex, wow, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Luke?
Yeah, I'm good. Nothing little therapy won't cure.
I know what you mean. Great.
So you're based in the UK. Whereabouts in the UK are you?
London, born and bred. I am a born and bred Londoner. There aren't actually that many of us. It's really interesting when people are like, oh no, but where did you grow up? And I'm like, London. They're like, oh shit, you're actually a London Londoner. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a London Londoner.
Did you go to school in Hammersmith? Is that correct?
So I went through the French system. The French system in the UK is basically a strange, comprehensive private school system. So basically, if you're a French kid, it's like a normal state school paid for by the French government. But if you're a British kid like me, it's technically a private school, if that makes sense. So it's like a private comprehensive, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And then I did my sixth form at Latimer Upper in Hammersmith. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which I loved. I was very happy there.
Yeah. How was that? Like, what were you like growing up? Because...
Very rebellious, I would say. Very rebellious, very political, very strong-minded. So a really good example was going to the lycée, the French lycée. It was an incredibly diverse, mixed community of kids. So a lot of my friends were from like former French African colonies. It was a very, very diverse group of kids that were at the lycée. And then I go to this very white, very posh sixth form where you could only have a head boy. You couldn't have a head girl.
Wow.
Because of traditionalism. And in a year of 300, there was one black kid, one. Jeez. So I demanded a meeting with the headmaster within 2 weeks of arriving at Latimer. I was 16 at this point, and I sat him down and I was like, look, mate, you've got a problem. Like, it is way too white. I say this as a white kid, right? I was like, it is way too white. And what in the frig's name is going on with this whole you can't have a head girl bullshit? Shit. I was like, I'm here. I would be a great head girl. There is no reason you can only have a head boy and no head girl. So could you please justify your choices to me? Anyway, 2 weeks after that, 1 month after arriving at the school, there's like a sort of settling in evening with the parents, like a sort of parents teacher evening. And my mom walks over to the headmaster and says, oh, hello, nice to meet you. And he goes, ah, yes, I know exactly who you are. You're Alex's mother. She was like, yes, what has she done? And he said, no, she's a very opinionated young lady. And she has some rather interesting points of view. Anyway, turns out I was completely right, that it was way too white of a school. And it was absolute nonsense that you couldn't have a head girl. And lo and behold, here we are 15 years later. And it's much more mixed, much more ethnically diverse. And you can have a head girl. See, I was just ahead of my time.
No, that's brilliant. I think that's fantastic that you just went in there and you're just like...
Oh, yeah, I really did. I had balls. Yeah, I had balls. I was furious that you couldn't have a head girl.
Yeah, I think that's shocking. But tell us more about you growing up, because your education obviously very focused, as you would expect, on arts and performance. And
yeah.
I read actually that you were the youngest student to be admitted into the drama studio at London.
Yeah, I was.
Which is crazy. Like, what was that like? And did you feel like there was this additional expectation to get tagged like that? I find that there must be a lot of pressure associated to it.
I think, so to kind of put it into context, it was an 18-month postgraduate course for people who had gone to university and already done their first 3 years in English language, drama, arts, theatre studies, whatever. And I had done a very big TV show when I was 18, which sadly was never released. But as I was waiting for this TV show to come out, and by the way, it is a very steep learning curve when you are a lead role in a primetime ITV drama that is never released at the age of 18. Like, that is a baptism of fire that I wouldn't wish on anyone. But whilst I was waiting for this TV show to come out, I missed the deadline on applying for any of the UCAS drama schools. So the UCAS-based drama schools at the time were ones like Central was UCAS, Drama Centre was UCAS, so all these other ones. So that left me with a really small pool of drama schools to apply to. at the very last minutes when I realized, oh shit, this show's not going to come out and I need an alternative. I should probably go to drama school and do something about my passion. So I applied and they kind of thought I was a bit crazy. They were like, well, you can't because you don't have a degree. And I went, excusez-moi. I think you'll find that I actually have a lot of professional credits because at this point in time, I'd kind of what I call earned my stripes, which is when you do Doctors or The Bill or EastEnders or something like that. So I actually had a fair bit of professional experience and also one of the leads in this TV series called Bombshell for ITV. And so I said to them, I was like, look, totally get that I haven't done a 3-year course, but I probably have more experience than anyone else that you're going to have on this course. So I think you should take me. And they did. It was great. You know, I loved it there. The only thing I would say is that at points I was very, very lonely, you know, which is not something I've really talked about much, but I was considerably younger. You know, I joined at 19 and I think I turned 20 whilst I was there and everyone else was 23, 24. Some people had already had careers. Some people, there was this lovely actor called Peter who'd been a doctor. You know, there was another guy who was in his 60s who'd been a lawyer who was becoming an actor. And so there were lots of different people from lots of different walks of life, which I loved, but it was really lonely at times. And I remember feeling a bit, I don't know, a bit ostracized or a bit bullied. Not that I necessarily was, but it was just, I wasn't in on the jokes because they were a bit more adult than I was, for example.
Has that helped you now, like having that experience then, or is it something that you kind of compartmentalize and then you move on?
I think you sort of compartmentalize it and move on. You know, I remember there were definitely moments of pain where I couldn't find a scene partner for something, or I couldn't find a group to do my showcase with. Or I remember people doubting me because I was so young and then kind of constantly having to prove myself a little bit. But, you know, I also remember my time there quite fondly in many regards. Yeah. And I still have friends from there and they're lovely people and talented people. And it was a great course to be on when I was on it.
You read about games getting cancelled in the, obviously the video games industry. And we've had people on who have even been like, you know, lead producers, or they've been like a founder of an indie studio. And then the indie studios, you know, had to cancel a project because of budgets. And there's always like a, you can feel the tang of emotion there because as a creative, you pour your heart and soul, you have to like, you know, really embrace whatever creative project you're working on. And what was that like for you as like obviously a young actress at the time?
It really was a baptism of fire. I can't describe eloquently enough to your listeners how incredibly impossible it is and unlikely it is to work as an actor. So when you book work, it's heavenly and you love your job and you love what you're doing. And then to book, you know, a leading role in a primetime ITV series, I was thrilled. I was 18. I was over the moon. I was working with some great people. I was getting loads of praise for the work that we were shooting on set. And then for it to kind of peter out and then be like, so when's the release date? Oh, we're pushing it back. Okay, but when's the release date now? Oh, we're pushing it back. But when's the release date? No, we're pushing it back. But how much are you pushing it back? To kind of slowly piece it together when no one gives you a straight answer, because actors are treated like mushrooms. We are kept in the dark and fed shit a solid 95% of the time.
So, that's, you know, great. But, that's not actually great.
But yeah. It's terrible. But you know, to kind of work that out at 18, this very brutal life lesson, which is, you know, I thought that all you had to do is get the job. Oh, no, no, no. You have to get the job. Then you have to do the job. Then you have to make sure that the job is released. And it's such a long road. You know, I remember once turning up to a shoot and there was like this weird vibe on set. And I was like, oh, the director doesn't seem very happy, but we haven't even worked together yet. Like, I kind of offended him already. Surely not. And it was because he was expecting me to arrive with bright red hair. But this message had never been communicated from the producers to my agents, to the makeup people, to me, that they wanted me to dye my hair. So I arrive and the director looked really depressed. And anyway, 4 hours later, they basically fired me and released me from the film. And I was like, this is so mad. Just to give you an idea of like, I've been let go because my hair wasn't right, even though, by the way, I was completely willing to change it. I just never had the message communicated to me. You know, I've shot lead roles in TV series that have never been released. I've shot, you know, medium-sized roles in films that have been cut down to tiny roles that you only find out, oh my God, they shrank my role by like 50%. Wow. And you find it out at the premiere. You know, I did a TV series, you know, not so long ago with a very famous actress. And it turns out that they've just cut my role from it. You know, and it was nothing I did. And the producers were very sweet. They called my agent. At least they let my agent know this time, which is something. You know?
Yeah, so geez.
And they called them up and they said it's absolutely nothing that Alex did. You know, she appeared in the middle of the series, which is true. And we decided to change the lead character's arc. And so we needed to change this defining moment and we need to change these scenes. And we're really sorry, but we've had to make a big edit and a big script change. And Alex's character just isn't in it anymore. But it happens. You know, I read it happened to Ana de Armas recently. It's happened to Scarlett Johansson. I said, try not to take it personally. She says, as she compares herself to Ana de Armas and Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
But I try not to take it personally, you know.
Do you have to accept that this is part of the craft, or is it something that you're like, that there is definitely room for improvement on how we manage this?
I mean, there is room for improvement, but ultimately I don't know how you improve it. You know, if the producers and the director say, actually, we're fundamentally changing this character, so we're unfortunately going to need to cut out the scenes with this Alex actress where the character seems, you know, quite aggressive or quite mean, and we're going to change her into something softer, then I also understand why that's happened. It's just, it's a very difficult job being an actor. You know, look, I'm not a brain surgeon. I'm not saving lives and I don't work in war zones. I'm very, very fortunate, you know, but it is a crushing, heartbreaking job when it's not being the best thing that you can do with your clothes on. Because it is the best thing you can do with your clothes on, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes with your clothes off, depending on the scene.
I'm just trying to think of other roles that are similar where you have that level of expectation and it changes. I can imagine it innately can create like imposter syndrome almost, because you must doubt at points how, I don't want to digress too much, by the way. But
no, of course.
It's just like the psychological side and the impact of it. It's
horrendous. I mean, yeah. I've spent the last 20 years of my life in therapy, which is almost the exact same time I've been an actress. So there you go.
Wow. Oh geez, I don't know, as I said, I don't know how you do it, but there is such a, like you say, it's the best job in the world. Yeah, I do think actresses and actors, you know, so many kids grow up wanting to do that and so few actually make it to the point that you've made it to. Tell us about your first role in video games. How did it come about and what was it like?
It came about through desperation. I was a waitress by day in a restaurant and a bartender by night. So true desperation. And I started applying for voiceover jobs because when I started out in the video game world, it was kind of, I guess, maybe an underrated market, an untapped market. I don't know what the word is, but a sort of quite an unexplored territory for a lot of actors. I think they didn't fully understand the breadth and depth of the gaming world. And I was very fortunate that my first audition was with a company called Side, who you know, and it was for a game called Dragon Age Origins, who a lot of people listening will know of. And I got the job and I was really surprised, actually. I was like, really? Like, because I think I went in and I was asked to kind of do weird stuff that I'd never been asked to do before, you know, with my clothes on, I hasten to add. But things like, you know, shout as a dragon comes towards you and fight a demon and all this kind of stuff. You know, I was asked to kind of vocalize and express. And of course, I'd never been asked to do that before as a serious thespian, quote unquote, as a stage actor and as a TV actor. And I loved it. And I just put my heart and soul into it. And it went really well. And the rest, as they say, is history.
It's brilliant. Did you find it a bit weird at first? Were you a bit like...
I loved it. I loved it. I took to it like a duck to water. I love it because the thing I love about video games and game work and voiceover work and so on and so forth is really you are asked to fully not just inhabit, but to fully express yourself through this one medium that you have, which is your voice, because they can't see you, right? Now, obviously, that's slightly different nowadays. We're doing performance capture and facial capture, so it's a slightly different string to one's bow. But ultimately, you know, you're not being asked to kind of stand still and do nothing, which is often what TV acting is, where you have very large thoughts and that's conveyed through your eyes and through your demeanor. And that's what's read. Mm. You know, the world of VO is all about putting it into your voice box and your being and letting it out, and letting it out with gusto and with fire. And I love that that's what this medium kind of celebrates, you know?
Yeah.
So it suits my personality. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I think that's a brilliant way of putting it. I mean, have you always been into games, or is it something that came with the role? Because I wouldn't blame you if it didn't come, you know, with the role, and then you're like, then you started exploring games further and it grew from there.
It's definitely something that came more with, you know, Dragon Age and subsequent titles after that. I mean, obviously I was, you know, kid of the 90s, grew up with a Sega Mega Drive and a Nintendo, playing Tetris and Mario Kart and stuff like that, Donkey Kong, all of that. So I did game when I was younger, but I didn't understand games in the way that I understand them now. I certainly didn't understand the acting side of it. I certainly didn't understand the life of games, you know? And now I mean, they're amazing. They're beautiful. They're emotional. Not all of them, right? Some of them are still, you know, shoot, shoot, bang, bang. But like, they at their best, they can be like beautiful and emotional and political and intelligent and smart and receptive to the world around them and progressive, you know, leading people to new thoughts and new ideas and new adventures. And the escapism of them, the artwork of them, the sound design, the music, they truly can be works of art. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic way of summarizing what they're like. Obviously, you came into the industry at a fantastic point, because games is now bigger than, you know, film and music and any other interactive entertainment form combined. It's just ridiculously big now. And that is down to the people, right? Like, that's down to the creators and the creatives, the actors and actresses, the writers. Everyone's kind of like constantly elevating it. What I do find interesting is, obviously, you continue to act within TV series, film, and you do both at the same time. How different is it working within the studio to on set, and which one do you prefer?
It's a very good question. I don't prefer one to the other. I would say it depends kind of what kind of mood I'm in that day, definitely. Mm. Depends what I'm doing. What I love about video games is the kind of physicality you can put into it to alter your voice, to emote through your voice, and so on and so forth. You know, you can be quite big whilst telling the truth. So for me, for my personality, it's a great way to get out a lot of energy. What I love about film and TV is, more often than not, you are actually acting opposite someone, which happens very, very rarely in video games. You're just acting to a microphone, you know? But what I love about film and television is it's the medium of the close-up. So you can convey incredible intimacy. It's also the medium of silence. And I'll always remember a drama school teacher at the drama studio who said to us, and I didn't understand it at the time, but he said, one day you'll understand that some of the best roles you ever play are the ones with no or very little lines. And I thought, what a load of codswallop. I want all the lines. I want all the lines. And now I really get it, because you can do so much without a line if you're acting in film and television. Because in film and TV, you don't need lines in the same way, because it's your face, right? Mm. However, the thing I love about the stage, and, you know, my heart really, I mean, I love theater, but what I love about it, every night it's different. You know, you're alive. It's an immediate response. It's sensational. You know, that was me clicking my fingers in the background for anyone to watch. But I love the spontaneity and the immediacy of it. It's the best. Mm. It's a great question, but I don't prefer one to the other. It just depends, I guess, what mood I'm in, and also what I then lean into more. You know?
Yeah, I can only like imagine, but I feel like I can see why that would be the way. Like, with theater and on set, you kind of get this immediacy. There's almost like probably a greater intensity and impact.
It's a feedback loop.
Yeah, that's it. And you're feeding off someone else's emotions. Whereas when you're within studio, when you're in the booth, you're creating that environment. Yeah. Like, on your own, and I can imagine. But maybe this lens for yourself and why you wanted to be so successful is maybe your time at Drama Studio London where you did have this period of not like isolation, if you want, but
being by myself. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I was probably just feeding off myself. Yeah.
Like, maybe this has helped you, like, and like help craft what you do today. And what is interesting is I was looking at what you're doing at the moment. You've always got a lot on, but one of the productions is bringing, you know, game and TV together in the series.
Dota, Dragon's Blood.
Yeah. What's this been like for you? Because I feel like this must be the best of both worlds.
It is sensational. So I've worked in a lot of different fields, but I would say one of the fields I've worked slightly less in is animation. So I was in The Amazing World of Gumball, which I love, which is an absolutely mental series for quote unquote kids, but it's really probably for adults on Cartoon Network. And then Dota. Those are the two big series that I've done. Dota, I play the goddess of the moon, obviously my natural casting. She is impossibly fit. Like, she's actually, have you seen a picture of her? Like, she's half naked with purple eyes and blonde hair down to her butt. And she's the goddess of the moon. But she's just wonderful. Her vanity, her greed, her lust for power, all of it.
Because what's it like working on like a production where Dota naturally doesn't have as like much lore? It does have a lot of lore and backstory, but it's not as much as say some more like Assassin's Creed, right? You worked in, obviously you'd lead role in Assassin's Creed, which has got this ridiculous amount of lore and context to all the characters and what's going on, and sometimes it can be a bit convoluted, but that it is there. What do you do with, like, you know, when you're playing as the Princess of the Moon, when you're working on this Dota series,
Goddess of the Moon, sorry, let's goddess, get that sorry. Right.
Goddess of the Moon. But with this goddess and with the Goddess of the Moon, like, how do you manage that? Do you have to, is a lot of it down to your perception of the character? Do you have to kind of take the lead in many ways? And do you have to, how closely do you have to work with the director?
The directors are always fantastic, as are the writers, as are, you know, key producers or casting directors or voice directors who really know the story. So they kind of, they really become your allies and they guide you and they really help you find your footing. And then what I love most and what I really respect is that once you've found your footing, they kind of let you run free and they trust that what you're going to do is right for the character and that you wouldn't do anything that wasn't right for the character, you know? So for example, you know, for Selimene in Dota, who's the goddess of the moon, I'm not going to spoil anything, but her heartbreak at moments where she becomes incredibly vulnerable, almost human. I want those moments to be authentic and truly heartbreaking. Now, she may have broken her own heart because of her, you know, because of her misdemeanors and miscalculations. But if her heart breaks, I want that to feel real when people are watching it and seeing it. You know, and when she loves, I want her to fully love in that full expression of love, basically. I don't really do things by halves. I think that's why people either love me or they hate me. So, you know, I'm not really a halfway person, basically.
No, but I think that's brilliant. It sounds like it's very important to be like that, I think, with what you do and like your role in these productions, like
maybe
that commitment.
It's certainly, I think it's incredibly important for any actor to fully 100% commit to a character. I think that potentially some of my views, I might be a bit too politically vocal on Twitter, for example, or I might be a bit too, you know, quote unquote controversial because I am, you know, anti-racism and anti-homophobia and I'm a feminist and, you know, all these kind of things. I think people get a bit intimidated by those words without necessarily realizing that they might be a feminist too, if they believe in the equality between men and women, you know, equal opportunities and so on and so forth. But I think one of the things I credit myself with is that I often get a lot of repeat clients and I really like that. So when people have worked with me, they will often work with me again. And I find that, like there's no bigger compliment basically that they're going to trust me with their material and trust me to do a good job and trust me to, you know, bring it and bring a level of authenticity.
It's always such a shame when you hear, like, because of your beliefs and your ideologies, which shouldn't even be ideologies, in my opinion, they should just be a standard. Like, there shouldn't be racism. There should be far greater equality through all, like, verticals of life, race, gender, so forth.
I think the point is, I think what you're trying to express, which I agree with, is the idea that being anti-racist should be the default. Being a feminist should be the standard. Being pro LGBTQIA plus rights should be normal and normalized.
Yeah.
And I think what's really sad is when people think of these things as controversial, too progressive, too different. It's like, no. This should be the norm. And if you want to be a racist or a misogynist, that should be controversial. That should be questioned. That's the stuff that should not be celebrated. And people should go, oh, I don't know, because he's never hired a woman. And what does that say? Is he the right guy for the job? Like, that's the stuff that should be looked at.
We're seeing an increased number of like series and film adaption of games. Like we have, like there's been film adaption of games the last like, you know, 2-3 decades. And but what we found recently is that TV series, like Netflix series and so forth, adaptations of games are far more, they seem to be like get more consistent positive critical praise. Like Dota, for example, is like doing extremely well. Like it got great feedback. I think
The Witcher,
Arcana, the League of Legends one again, got really good feedback. Whereas film adaptations are still like quite hit and miss. Why do you think this is?
It's a really interesting question. It's not something I thought about before, but I wonder if it's something to do with the scope of television. So you have a game like The Witcher, which can be hundreds of hours, for example, right? And you can inject that into 8, 10, 12 episodes at 1 hour each of a Netflix series. You can't do the same with a 2-hour film. You just can't. You can't get that depth. You can't get that breadth. You can't get that richness of the lore that comes through in a game with a film. It's really hard to do, really. I admire anyone that tries, but I agree it's really hard to do. And I think maybe television series is the natural fit if you're going to adapt a game into a TV series, for example.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that makes complete sense. Do you think that's why we see things like the Marvel series, for example, where it's just this, you know, this 2 decades old now, I think.
Yeah.
Like it's got, you know, from Iron Man all the way up to where we are now.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to talk to you about next was really more about your creative process, because, you know, when you're working on a production or a piece, like you obviously, like you said yourself, you're kind of like an all or nothing kind of person.
Yeah.
But how do you apply that when it comes to getting into character, and how do you define what that process should be, or does it change production to production?
It definitely changes production to production. I can be quite specific and exacting. So if it's a voiceover for a game, for example, then I like to hear the character's accent and voice on a repeat, almost on a loop, until I'm really into it every day that I turn up to the studio. If it's a film or TV script, then I'm really big on like understanding the entire Bible of the world, and I'll have mapped out exactly where my character was before that scene, where my character's going after that scene. Because for anyone that's listening that doesn't know, you will shoot a film and television series out of order. It's not done chronologically. And same with the video game. You often record out of order, depending on how big and how sprawling the video game is. But I really like to know, okay, where was I before? Where am I going after? So it gives me an idea of the character's arc and journey. Oh, depending on how much time I've got. I mean, if I've got weeks of rehearsal, oh, I do it all. I'm like, okay, what animal is she? Right. Is she a panther? Is she a tiger? Is she a lioness? And I'll like go and I'll look at the differences between, you know, a panther, a tiger and a lioness. So that's a day wasted. I'll waste multiple hours, you know, recording my lines exactly onto my iPhone so that I can play them back and back and back and back. Then it'll be like, she's from Boston. And I'll be like, oh my God, well, I should go and research the entire history of Boston. I mean, I can entertain myself for years with this stuff. One of my favorite things is looking up what a character's name means, because I like to think, and I think I'm often right on this, that, you know, writers do spend a lot of time choosing a character's name. So I'll go and I'll look on like a baby naming website, something, and it'll say, oh, her name's Lucy, for example. I'll be like, ooh, that means from the light. So she is the bringer of light. Where can she bring light? Things like that. But I'll go all out. Like I love research. I love rehearsal. Probably of anything at all, my absolute favorite part of the process is rehearsal, because rehearsal is a process of discovery, just pure discovery, pure play, pure investing. And I love rehearsal.
It's fascinating to hear that you go to that depth.
Oh my God, of course. I just wish I had more time to. that's the thing, is a lot of the time you don't necessarily get a rehearsal, you know, for a film or a television show or a video game. Or if people give me the time to do it, I can write thesis, numerous thesis on my various characters, you know.
So obviously, like, when you've got a new role and you're working in production, you know the level of detail that you go to into that backstory to give your character context and really to have like a reason for the decisions they make and how they would act it's so professional now. And I feel like narration and performance and script writing in games is constantly like pushing the boundaries of the standard. The standard is constantly like obviously increasing, improving and being redefined. Where do you see this going though? Like at what point do you think can games eclipse film? Can they get to that point?
I think they potentially can if they become truly accessible to all and understood by all. I think games still intimidate people. You know, like my mum, for example, wouldn't know how to play a game, or she'd be intimidated by a console, or she'd think it's like for quote unquote for kids. So I think it depends on what games do. So if you look at something like Bandersnatch, which Netflix did, it was a TV show and it was a game at the same time. I think that will probably continue to develop and progress onwards into the future. And depending on where they go, sky's the limit. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it will be possible to get the same emotive feedback? Because you spoke about this earlier, you know, like that emotive connection, that emotional connection you have with other like actresses and actors when you're on set. And with a player, it's almost like you're doing that to the player and the player's not there, but they're doing their inputs. Do you think we'll ever get to that point where we get that emotive feedback from players consistently? Or do you think this is something where we have to actually wait for animation to catch up with the performance of the actresses and actors?
It's really interesting. I don't know the answer to that. It's really interesting. No, it's really interesting because, so for example, from a player /consumer point of view, one of the things that I love about films is that I can have a big emotional experience that I can be open to and receptive to. And that emotional experience is normally contained between, you know, 2 to 3 hours, basically, of my life. Games gone for much longer. So you can have multiple emotional experiences, but they might be smaller in terms of intensity rather than the end of the game where it's the climax, it's the big boss fight or whatever. So I think it depends on how games manage to adapt, how games manage to become more and more impactful continuously. Does that make sense?
Mm. Do you ever feel like you've worked on a production, like a video game production, and your performance has been held back a bit by the graphical ability of the game or the console, making it more difficult for players to resonate with what you're doing?
I would say no, actually, because I've been very lucky, which is that I've worked on some really good technologically advanced games at the point of recording or at the point of filming. And when I say filming, I mean if it was a performance capture game, for example. I would say that sometimes the thing that can hold a character back, particularly if it's a female character, would probably be the writing or the depiction of the woman in that situation, or the placing of that woman and her experience in the storyline, you know, where she can be reduced or belittled or ignored or whatever, and the guy will get all the good lines and the good emotes. That obviously holds you back as an actress because you're just not given the opportunity to share your juiciness with the audience. Basically, the man is sharing it. He gets to share all of the juiciness, you know. The woman's just not asked to. It's just like, oh, just take a seat, love, while he finishes this really emotional scene, and you're like, oh, okay, fine. I'm totally fine with that.
Do you find like games are more progressive than film and TV?
Because I think that games have come on leap and bounds. I mean, don't you? Like, wow. Yeah. Compared to where it was when I started, you know, there's more often than not always a female player character that you can choose now. You know, there's more often than not a female voice that you can have. There might even be, you know, a gender fluid or a gender neutral option that you can play. So I think on the whole, they've come on leaps and bounds. But I would say that television has as well. You know, television, the people that we're seeing on our screens, is much more inclusive than it ever has been.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I like the games now. You can choose the gender of your lead, right? Like Assassin's Creed, for example, like Cyberpunk and so on. Like, I think that's incredibly important. And I think with games where you can choose your gender, like with MMOs and RPGs, you actually find that from looking at this statistically, like actually female characters are more popular. And it's quite surprising. I think sometimes people think it's actually going to be that would never be the case, and it'd be a real small portion. But you have a lot of like male players play as female characters as well. And I think, and vice versa. And I just think, it's just interesting to hear your view on that, because obviously you're within that world, right? Mm. You're portraying female characters. And
also, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? It's great. Like, go and have a run around in a man's body if you're a woman. Go and have a run around in a woman's body if you're a man. You know?
Yeah.
I do think, one point to stress, that maybe gaming hasn't quite tackled to the best of its abilities yet, I would say, is delineating the male-female experience. So if you choose to play as a man, then actually your experience of things that you go through should innately be somewhat different to the experiences of the female character. And I noticed this from games that I've voiced where I've been the lead and I've been the quote-unquote, you know, the female player character, but they're asking me to perform my scenes exactly as the man did. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. The male player character is 6'4" and weighs 100 kilos, you know? The female player character is, okay, let's say 5'8", so she's still tall for a woman, but she's 60 kilos, you know? And you're up against this boss who's like 10 foot and weighs, you know, 200 kilos or whatever. Like, there's going to be differences in the way that you talk, in the way that you get out of difficult situations, in the way that you charm, manipulate, cajole, whatever you want to use, fight, just the way that you fight. How are you going to fight? You're going to fight differently, you know? And I think that will be a really cool, progressive, interesting, detailed day when there's proper kind of separation of the female and the male experience. And sometimes you'll play games where those male female player character experiences are exactly the same, and that's totally cool and it's fine. You know, if you're looking for a treasure chest, for example, you know, but there's other games that I've been in where I've been like, oh, they really missed an opportunity here, where the opportunity was to do something different, you know, with the woman. And unfortunately, they just wanted her to fit into the kind of male characterization, basically.
That's a brilliant point. I think that probably is where, when we like spoke about briefly earlier about what's the next step. But I think that is it. It's where the characters you're portraying, we talked about Assassin's Creed with like Abubakar Salim, like we had him on few weeks ago. Yeah, fantastic, fantastic guy. And he obviously, with Assassin's Creed, you portrayed two different leads. But actually, I think you're right with something like, say, Cyberpunk, for example. I think the way, if you choose to be a female character, like, I think the way people interact with you should be different.
Yeah.
When you go into a bar, there could be different reasons for conflict, right? Yeah. Than there would be with a male. Because you make a character huge and he's a male, maybe he struggles in other areas where they wouldn't if there was a female character.
100% agree. 100% agree.
It'd be fantastic. I think that would add, like, that is like the next layer. Obviously, I understand from a development point of view the budget concern.
Of course, it's hugely expensive.
On the back of this, like, what's been your most memorable role and so far, and why?
Most memorable role in video games?
Yeah, ideally. video games. It doesn't have to be.
No. It's a great question. I mean, the ones that I hold very dear to my heart, you know, Aya, because she was so important to the Creed from Assassin's Creed Origins. Sam Trainer from Mass Effect 3, because it was one of the first times I got to do some incredible kind of video game acting with great scripts. The Inquisitor from Dragon Age 3. Dragon Age Inquisition, I should say. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it was just amazing. Like, the scope and the scale of that game is mammoth. Carillion from Vermintide, because she's an ongoing character who gets more feisty and ruder and more sarcastic, you know, the more games and the more chapters and the more iterations that we do of her. I'm trying to think who else. I do have a fondness for the elves that I play. I tend to play a lot of elves, and I love them. I love all my babies equally. But no, but those are the big time. I mean, alt from Cyberpunk as well, you know, because or a lot of alt scenes are opposite Keanu Reeves. And that was such a trip, acting opposite someone like Keanu Reeves.
It shows you, like, with you, with yourself, and obviously, like, the other actresses and actors that you've been working with, obviously, the focus on, I think games can now attract, like, talent like yourself and, like these other huge stars. I think that's just going to continue. I think that there's kind of, like you said, like, all the reasons you've said, I really do think that how you can take a role within games is just constantly being elevated because of the technology and the budget that they're being afforded for these huge productions and these huge pieces.
I think also what's really interesting is that for people like Gary Oldman, for example, you know, I'm pretty sure that he hadn't been in a video game up until he stepped onto the mocap stage for Squadron 42. So for him, you know, it's a new experience as well. And of course, why wouldn't you want that? You know, you should always be learning. You should always be experimenting. If you're open to trying new things, how wonderful, you know? And so I think that for a lot of actors of his Oscar-winning caliber, it kind of is an opportunity to try something different and go, oh, yeah, I was in a video game, actually. You know, it's pretty cool.
Does it ever feel weird in that scenario? Because that's where you become the person with the knowledge bank, right? Because you've been doing this for like 10 years.
A nice way of looking at it. Yeah, that is a nice way of looking at it, actually. Yeah, it does. But I guess, you know, any actor that kind of gets hired for a game, they're being hired because they're brilliant. And the casting people or the director or the producers will have done their job, you know. So at that point, it's really just about, you know, you give them a few pointers like, okay, so this is a T-pose, but they're going to learn that pretty quickly. Or, you know, things like, oh, we're going to go again for this little bit of tech. But, you know, they're the masters, as much as I am sometimes, but they are the masters, you know.
Yeah. Well, that must be fantastic. I think it's been great. I've got a couple more questions. I'm just gonna, then we'll wrap up. So Abubakar Salim, obviously we spoke about him. He was great. He's decided to go deeper into games.
Yeah,
and
it's brilliant.
Create his own game studio. And we had a lot of banter last time because he was, he spoke a lot about not being sure about what he was doing, but he knew what he wanted to create. And I think that's a great starting point, is knowing what you're looking to do. And his studio is set up to do more creative narrative-led experiences, more unique ones within games. But I've got to ask you, like, what about yourself? Like, have you been tempted to go deeper into game production, like, say, direct your own game? Because I know you've written and directed a short film. Would you be ever tempted to do that?
So I have actually directed a bit for video games, and I've been very lucky to direct something else that I'm not allowed to talk about. And I have, you know, spoken to Abu, actually, about possibly collaborating in the future. So we'll see what happens. But I love directing. Directing's great because you get to have this kind of bird's eye view of the whole in a different way to acting. Of course, if you're the lead character in something, you do get a pretty solid bird's eye view. But ultimately, as an actor, your job is to fiercely defend and portray your character with every breath of life in you. Whereas as a director, you're defending the integrity of the story as a whole, and you're holding the kind of the heart and the scope, like you're holding the whole world of the story in your hands, and you have to so delicately tease out the relevant bits so that it makes a cohesive whole. It's a bit like cooking. Directing is a bit like cooking. You need to get the right amount of ingredients. You need to put them in at the right time. I love that because, you know, I am a bit of an egomaniac myself, and being a puppet master really suits me.
So, oh, no, that's brilliant. I think that's, again, really very eloquently put. Like, I love the cooking analogy as well. Like, I think
I've never said that before, and I'm going to keep that. I need to remember that one. I was like, oh, that's good. The cooking is good. Keep the cooking thing, Alex. But it's true.
I think that's fantastic. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the projects. I think, unfortunately, obviously, because of NDAs, as always, we'll have to wait and see.
They're big. But you'll know when they're out. Yeah. But anyway, these two projects were the first time that I had properly directed for video games with real actors, with real scripts, with real lines, with real stories. And it felt great.
Brilliant. Fantastic.
Thank you.
To like wrap us up, like, I always ask guests to summarize their career thus far in a single sentence. Everyone's is quite different. Some are longer than a single sentence. We try and keep it like short and punchy. Like, how would you summarize your career?
I'm not going to give you a sentence. I'm going to give you three words.
Okay.
And those words are one and only. That's what I'm going to give you. One and only, you know, completely unique, full of massive highs, full of absolute crushing lows, and huge amounts of doubts and confusion, but also immense beauty. And when I really sit and kind of reflect back, actually much to be proud of, you know.
Do you know what, speaking to you today, I mean, that's a brilliant way to summarize it, because it has been like, you know, at the start of the episode, listening to the challenges like you face, especially having like what your first big production cancelled, where you were the lead.
Awful. Horrendous. Yeah, the worst thing. Is... the truly worst thing.
You know? Yeah. And then look now, it's like, I look at your IMDb, you're literally like, Squadron 42 is obviously going to be huge. I know we haven't spoken about it much today because of NDAs and so forth, but
still
that's
working
be huge.
On it. That's why.
Yeah.
Still working on it.
Hopefully when we speak again, that will have made progress. Yeah. But yeah, it's like that with Dota, with, you know, Assassin's Creed, like you've had, you know, you've been this actress that, like, within some games, like pinnacle moments in terms of leading performance-led interactive experiences. And I think that it almost feels like from those earlier moments in your career, you can see like milestones steadily being hit as you progressed, and obviously now directing as well. So it's been, yeah, it's been a journey, but it's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure being here.
Good. I'm glad. I'm just, oh God, yeah. The disclaimers, yeah, obviously the views you've heard today are those of Alex's and my own, and
yes,
do not represent our employers or whether we're working for.
They should. They're good views to have. They should.
They are. They should.
Our employers should be anti-racist.
They should.
Feminist.
Yeah. 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 Those, yeah, they should. They should. In general, you can contact us at gamedevshow@ptw.com. Alex, it's been a pleasure for a journey.
Thank you so much, Luke. You've been wonderful.
Speak soon.
You've been wonderful. Take care.
Thank you. Game over.